I'm Keith Hall, and this is Jazz Currents. Join me as we celebrate the music of jazz drumming legend Billy Hart. You're listening to drummer Billy Hart. The Washington, D.C. native is celebrating his 75th birthday this month. Let's take a journey through the life and music of one of the most versatile and recorded drummers in jazz. This is from a recording that Billy made with the man that introduced him to jazz when he was a teenager, Washington, D.C.'s most revered saxophonist, Buck Hill.
He ended up giving me these two 78s, these two Charlie Parker records. And I heard the music, and it really captivated me. And I began to just listen to these records over and over and over again.
I'm old-fashioned, I love the moonlight.
Buck Hill was also responsible for introducing Billy to pianist and vocalist Shirley Horn at a Washington, D.C. jam session. Known for her deep sense of swing, extremely slow ballads, and deep connection to the lyrics, Grammy winner Shirley Horn took the young Billy Hart under her wing, and he performed in her trio extensively. These early experiences with Buck Hill and Shirley Horn would prove to be invaluable.
To think back on it now, it was a treasure, it was a gold mine of knowledge that I received fortuitously. I didn't realize until years and years later when I actually moved to New York how prepared I was, and basically it was from Buck and Shirley.
And I don't mind it. That's how I want to be. As long as you agree to stay old-fashioned, to stay old-fashioned with me. I'm old-fashioned. I love the moonlight. I love.
Then in 1964, Billy Hart began working with the very influential Hammond B3 organist Jimmy Smith. This is Billy on the drums from a 1965 concert at the Village Gate in New York City. This is The Champ. After 3 years, Billy Hart went from Jimmy Smith's trio to working with guitar virtuoso Wes Montgomery until his passing in 1968, at which time Hart made the move to New York City. In 1969, bassist Buster Williams recommended Billy to fill the drum chair in the Herbie Hancock Sextet. Billy went on to record 4 albums with Hancock. One of these was the 1971 release titled M1 Dishi, with Buster Williams on bass, Eddie Henderson on trumpet, Benny Maupin on woodwinds, and Julian Priester on the low brass. This is Ostinato. In 1973, Billy left the Herbie Hancock Sextet and began working with people like Wayne Shorter, Joe Zawinul, Pharoah Sanders, Eddie Harris, and Marion McPartland. He recorded with Miles Davis in 1972 on his album, On the Corner, and he also performed with McCoy Tyner for 2 years before becoming a member of the Stan Getz Group until 1977. So throughout the 60s and 70s, drummer Billy Hart had the opportunity to perform with some of the most influential names in jazz and had become one of the most important sidemen in the business. However, Billy was just getting started. In 1977, Billy made the leap from being a sideman to recording his first album as a leader. This gave Billy the opportunity to draw from his various experiences and play with fewer boundaries. Billy refers to this as multi-directional music, and this first record was called Enchance. Here is Billy's composition, Layla Joy.
With Stan Getz at the time, I was going to reflect myself, which was this amazing Coltrane influence. It was pretty far out. It was pretty ambitious listening for even the musicians, let alone the average listener. So thinking of it in any commercial way was actually had to have some discussions with my wife about that. She was asking, why would you do that? You know, but I really, you know, when you think of where music is today, it doesn't even seem that far out. But, you know, it was a combination of my love of Coltrane and my experience with Herbie Hancock.
Enchance included an all-star lineup featuring Dewey Redman, Marvin Hannibal Peterson, Eddie Henderson, Oliver Lake, Don Pullen, Dave Holland, and his old friend Buster Williams.
It was my first opportunity to put people together that didn't know each other that well. So to put them together turned out to be a pretty good thing. You know, because that record, the first record I ever made in my life under my own name, in the San Francisco paper, put me at number 15 of the best 100 records released that year. And that was jazz or classical and pop music together, and I got number 15. But it was interesting that the record company itself, when I asked them could I make another record, the new producer of those recordings on Horizon told me, frankly, Billy, I don't like your kind of music.
So in 1985, Billy Hart moved on to a new record label and released his second record as a leader called Oshumare. Although bassist Dave Holland and percussionist Manolo Bedrena were veteran players on this, the rest of the band consisted of younger musicians who had yet to find their stride. The group included guitarists Bill Frisell and Kevin Eubanks, saxophonist Steve Coleman and Branford Marsalis, keyboardist Mark Gray and Kenny Kirkland, and the lyrical violinist Didier Lockwood. All of these musicians would go on to have very successful solo careers. This is Billy Hart's composition, Lorca. Thank you. tenor and soprano saxophonist David Liebman has performed with Billy Hart on and off for over 25 years. Liebman met Billy for the first time on the 1972 Miles Davis recording On the Corner, but it wasn't until later that the two solidified their musical connection. In 1981, Liebman formed a band called Quest, which included pianist Richie Bayrak, bassist George Mraz, and drummer Al Foster. They had recorded their first record and were preparing for a tour when drummer Al Foster got a call to go back on the road with Miles Davis. Here's Liebman speaking of why Billy was the obvious replacement.
Well, Billy is, you know, I mean, he's a real professional. He can, you know, he can play anything. He has the tradition down, and he's constantly creative and always knows what's right for the music. You see him play a spectrum from conservative to, you know, radical, and he can do it all.
Liebman is obviously as obsessed with Coltrane as I am. So once we actually had a chance to demonstrate that to each other on the bandstand, you know, the rest is history. I mean, we were going to be doing that.
Billy became the regular drummer in Quest, and Ron McClure replaced George Mraz on bass. The band recorded Quest 2 and Quest 3 in 1987 and followed those up in 1988 with Natural Selection. And after a 15-year hiatus, the supergroup reemerged in 2005 with the release of Redemption. In 1988, Billy released his third album entitled Raw, and in the early 1990s, he formed a new band. This group continued to have a distinctive sound that was a result of Hart's many influences and unique instrumentation. The band included guitarist Dave Fusinski, bassist Santi Debriano, pianist David Kokoski, keyboardist Mark Copeland, violinist Mark Feldman, and saxophonist John Stubblefield and Chris Potter. By 1997, they had recorded two albums, including Amethyst and Oceans of Time. Here is another one of Billy's compositions, which is the title track from Oceans of Time. Besides leading his own band, Hart was extremely busy throughout the 1990s performing and recording as a sideman with various artists like Charles Lloyd, Tom Harrell, and the Saxophone Summit, which featured Joe Lovano, Dave Liebman, and Michael Brecker. In 2003, the Billy Hart Quartet was born. Besides Hart, this new band included three of the most innovative and fresh-sounding musicians on the New York jazz scene. The quartet includes Mark Turner on saxophone, Ethan Iverson on piano, and Ben Street on bass. We're listening to their take on Charlie Parker's classic, Confirmation.
These guys are extraordinary conceptualists. I mean, neither one of them, Ben Street, Ethan Iverson, or Mark Turner, for people their age, they're extraordinarily unique. They don't sound like anybody else. In this day and age, that's almost impossible. You have to hear somebody say, well, he sort of sounds like Wayne, or he sort of sounds like Charlie Parker, or he sort of sounds like Coltrane. You can't say that at all about Mark Turner. Mark Turner sounds like Mark Turner. Ethan Iverson really sounds like Ethan Iverson.
And this fits perfectly with Billy Hart, because the same can be said about him. Billy Hart has his own sound and his own unique vocabulary. He's one of those drummers that has an unmistakable sound. You just know it's Billy Hart. The Billy Hart Quartet has recorded 3 CDs on the highly regarded ECM record label. Let's hear a bit of Tolly's Dance. Billy continues to travel constantly, either performing with one of his many European bands, the Saxophone Summit, or the all-star group The Cookers. And he teaches at various music schools around the world. Having done so much in his career, I asked Billy about the future and what he would still like to accomplish.
My ambition has always been to study music, and it remains to this day that I'd like to know more about, you know, harmony and theory. And I guess the next from that is composition. And all my heroes, you know, Max Roach, Tony Williams, you know, they've all accomplished that. I know how they felt because I feel the same way. So if I've got any relationship in that direction towards those kinds of musicians, it's because I really understand the desire to want to be a higher level musician.
Billy Hart is one of the most in-demand, inspiring, and dynamic musicians in the world, and someone who I call my musical father. Billy Hart is an eternal student. He's very curious, and he's always exploring new concepts. He has shown so many of us what it means to be totally dedicated to the music. On behalf of musicians everywhere, thank you, Billy. Here's to you, and happy 75th, my friend. I'm Keith Hall, and Jazz Currents is produced at WMUK with support provided by the Irving S. Gilmore Foundation and the Western Michigan University School of Music. Be sure to check out WMUJazz.com for upcoming jazz events. And make sure you get out and experience some live jazz. See you soon.